This is our number 10.
It's time for the fastest 15 minutes in the news. This is Dory's Fastest 15.
These are crazy times in America, and I think now more than ever, we all need a hero. And ordinarily, I would not say that an impaired driver pulled over by police would qualify for hero status. But as we begin our Fastest 15 today, I think we've found our hero. His name is Adrian. Let me tell you a little bit about Adrian's story. So Utah State Patrol, they saw an SUV driving down the freeway very erratically, weaving out of its lane rather consistently, and the State Patrol had to pull over the vehicle that they were following. Here is the State Patrol trooper, Rick Morgan.
I could see a car that was weaving badly back and forth between lanes. It amazed me when he heard my siren that he did pull right over and stop. It was pretty clear when the window came down that it was a young, very underage driver. He was sitting on the front edge of the seat so that he could reach the brake pedal.
By very underage driver, he means 5 years old. Adrian, last name not given, Adrian was driving his mom's SUV down the freeway. 5 years old. I don't think I would have been able to do
kids
that.
Kids are kids, and they get an idea in their head and don't realize what it takes to pull that off. Likely would have been a lot worse if he traveled much further. I think the realization that something probably wasn't quite right hit him. I don't think we'll see him in the situation again soon.
So Adrian made it from his home onto the freeway in Utah. And you're probably wondering, where was Adrian going?
He wanted to buy a Lamborghini when he got there, and he showed a wallet with $3.
He was going to go to California to buy a Lamborghini with the $3 that he had. And he said that the boy was very upset that his trip to Cali was interrupted by the cops.
He was upset. He was on the verge of tears.
And his sister said, yeah, I saw what he was doing.
Oh, I lost it. I called people because I was scared.
She said she was watching him and had taken a nap when she woke up.
And I seen that the truck was gone, that he was gone and the keys were gone. How does a little 5-year-old, 11 years younger than me, do it and I can't?
Home safe and lesson learned.
Oh, yeah, a lot, many. To never leave the keys out.
Yeah, you don't leave the keys out around Adrian. So at a time when we need a hero, when we are all feeling cooped up in our homes, when we want to bust loose and maybe violate that stay-at-home order, but we're too constrained by just the adulthood in us, I want you to remember Adrian, who is sick and tired of staying at home, tucked $3 away, and went to Cali to buy a Lamborghini. And here's Adrian. He said something about a drive-thru. He's a good driver, but he's not that articulate.
He said, I drive good.
Oh, I drive good. The State Patrol trooper told him he drives good. So there you go, Nicole. We finally have a representation of all the people who want to violate stay-at-home.
He's pretty amazing. How old were you when you first drove? Because I was actually 6, so I was not far behind this kid, although I didn't do as well. I hit a tree.
Oh, really? I don't remember. I think it's probably about 10 when I first
My grandpa
drove
let
up
me. Yeah, when I was 6 and I couldn't reach the brake pedal to get it to the floor. So I slowed down, but I couldn't get it all the way to the floor and I hit a cherry tree. But
yeah,
I'm 6 years old, so it's not totally out of the question, I think.
My wife's parents, they had a farm about 10 minutes from their house down in Vancouver, Washington, just a little farm. And we would take our girls out to the farm and just take the minivan out into the field. And we let the girls drive when they were about 12 or 13, just so they could start to get a feel for it. But he was on the freeway, and he wasn't doing that bad.
It was, I know. I mean, he was switching lanes. He kind of, you know, he was weaving a little bit, but he was trying to stay in between the lines. And when he got pulled over, he pulled over perfectly. It absolutely just came to a, on the side of the road, just came to a stop. It was perfect.
Right onto the shoulder. Yeah, it was. So there you go. Adrian is now the poster child for those who are sick of staying at home. Okay, up
They say that they don't know how I figured it out, but like between video games and just like, you know, I don't know, four-wheelers or little race car things that kids ride around on, it's not surprising to me. We teach them early.
It's surprising to me, an SUV like that. But okay, next up in the Fast 15, if you're listening last half hour, Ed Troyer, the Pierce County detective, has been the sheriff's spokesman for a long, long time. Today is his 35th anniversary of when he was hired. He was hired on Cinco de Mayo in 1985, and he could retire, but instead, Ed Troyer still feels a calling, and he announced exclusively on the Dory Monson show that he is going to run for Pierce County Sheriff. How weird would this be for us, Nicole, for you, who's always booking our guests, because you got Ed Troyer, who we have a very nice relationship with, obviously, since he made his announcement on our show. We had Adam Fortney, the Snohomish County Sheriff. And by the way, there's a woman in Snohomish County who wants to recall the Snohomish County Sheriff because he says he will not enforce stay at home. And we're going to talk to that woman right after our top of the hour news at 2 o'clock at 2:06. Cause I like Adam Fortney, but she wants him kicked out of office because he refuses to abide by stay at home. So, we have a good relationship with the Snohomish County Sheriff. We would have a very good relationship if Troyer wins with the Pierce County Sheriff. And the King County Sheriff and her dictatorial aide-de-camp, who makes $180,000 a year, Liz Rocha, they despise us with every fiber of their beings. How weird. I mean, we're going to have whiplash between the three county sheriffs in our main area here.
I think that it speaks to where our listeners, you know, I think that they are supportive of the way that we handle the one that doesn't cooperate as well.
Well, it's not she doesn't cooperate. She's a liar. She told me the question Troyer. I said, will you come on with us and answer any question, no matter how embarrassing for you or the department? And he said, absolutely. And Mitzi Jo Hanknick said the exact same thing. She said, yes. And then she comes on one time. We ask a tough question that she doesn't like about her agency providing hundreds of thousands of dollars a year of drivers and personnel to shepherd Dow Constantine around. And Liz Rocha starts screaming at you in the control room.
Yeah, I was going to say, it wasn't a question she cared about. It was Liz that didn't like the question.
I don't care who it is. Mitzi's the one who made the promise, and Mitzi's the one who won't come on. You know, she's a liar. She's an absolute liar. And by the way, she also has just cost you, if you live in King County, your share of $2.25 million. And that's because a 17-year-old kid was shot to death by King County Sheriff's Detective. Mike Carter at the Seattle Times has this story. I want to give attribution, even though Mike Carter was calling me illiterate on Twitter last week. But Mike Carter did the story at the Seattle Times. And in 2017, the 17-year-old kid was shot. And what happened was he was buddies with a 16-year-old who was trying to sell some bootleg liquor on social media. And the King County Sheriff's Department set up a sting operation. And they had reason to believe that one of these kids was involved in the killing of the son of a King County cop. And so they set up the sting operation, and in the course of the pursuit, they shot and killed the 17-year-old kid. Both the 16-year-old and the 17-year-old had guns, but they ruled that the King County Sheriff's Department made so many mistakes, missteps, poor planning. And this is something that I've talked about since we started investigating. And that's the other reason why Mitzi Jo Hanknik and her dictator assistant, Liz Rocha, despise us, because we've exposed all of the incompetency. And what we have learned from dozens of rank and file officers and detectives and personnel in the King County Sheriff's Office is that there is just sheer incompetency at the very top. And certainly that's what this jury ruled, or this court ruling was, that they had violated so many basic tenets of proper procedure. And so now you and I get to pay $2.25 million to the family of a 17-year-old kid with a gun who was with a guy trying to sell bootleg liquor on social media, and their parents get wealthy off the taxpayers because of the incompetency of King County Sheriff Mitzi Jo Hanknik. And so, I guess I understand why she doesn't care for us, because we call out just how atrocious she is as the sheriff. And so on and on it goes.
I wonder how many more deputies will leave the King County Sheriff's Department for the Pierce County once Troyer takes over.
Well, did you see the emails that I received on the King County Sheriff's? She was a screener at the King County Courthouse who died over the weekend because of COVID-19. And I was alerted to this on April 15th when a member of the King County Sheriff's Department forwarded me something about this. Did you see a court security person? And my source did not write this. They forwarded it from somebody else. But April 15th, this was sent to me. I went back in my email. Did you see a court security person at the courthouse was positive for COVID? Keeping secrets again. I noticed they all have masks and gloves this week, not last week, when this worker supposedly contracted it. It was not put in a department-wide email. It was sent to supervisors at the courthouse, who passed it on to us. Our command staff cannot bother to share information. And that's one of the reasons why the rank and file can't stand the King County Sheriff. And, you know, other sources have told me that they're getting these paper-thin masks. They work five-day weeks, and they have issued them four paper-thin masks. And the King County Sheriff's Office is just in shambles because of Mitzi Jo Hanknik. And so she costs the taxpayers $2.25 million. Obviously, they feel that she acted far too slow and getting a mask and gloves for a screener at the King County Courthouse who passed away on Sunday. And by the way, this woman's name was Juliet, and she was quite clearly very, very loved by all of her colleagues. And it's very sad that she's been lost. So I'm sorry to report that all of the incompetency at the very top, again, the deputies, the detectives, the rank and file, awesome, awesome people. They're getting it done. But Mitzi Jo Hanknik has shown in the past she's willing to risk the lives of cops when she pulled out of that database that shared information on criminals with other agencies. She would rather risk the lives of her officers than violate her social justice causes. So on and on it goes at the King County Sheriff's Office. Gosh, I wonder why she won't talk to us. Okay, next up in the Fastest 15. Have you been following the story of this Amazon engineer who quit his job very closely?
Well, following it as much as you have. I haven't, or maybe not as much as you have, because I know you've looked into it.
Okay. Tim Bray is his name, and he is the new hero of the social justice left, because there were some Amazon workers back on the East Coast, and they were leading protests against Amazon. They said they were warehouse employees afraid of COVID-19. But the guy who was leading all of these protests, he would take the workers out into the streets with no social distancing, and he would violate what he said was his greatest fear. And plus, if you lead public protests against your employer, the people who write you a paycheck, of course they're not going to keep you on. If I led a public protest against Bonneville, I would expect to be fired for that. And Amazon did fire three workers. So this Tim Bray guy, who's described, you know, Seattle Times headline, Amazon vice president, a distinguished engineer, resigns to protest firing of employee activists. And they talk about how he's making $1 million a year, and he walked away from his $1 million a year job. Well, this guy, he's 64 years old. He has worked previously. He's owned his own high-tech company that he sold. He worked at Sun Microsystems. He worked at Google. I've seen estimates of his net worth at around $15 million. Some estimates much, much higher. And what kind of a hero? Oh, he walked away from $1 million a year job. Yeah, if you're stinking filthy rich and you're near retirement anyway, and you decide that you just want to be the knee-jerk social justice hero of everybody in the media because you're so noble, there's nothing noble about that. I'm annoyed by these guys older than me, filthy rich, who act like what they're doing has some element of nobility to it. The guy's just, he's a glory hog. Of course, a company's not going to keep workers who lead public protests against them. But the media, as Pavlovian as they are, oh, this Tim Bray is a hero, I tell you. No, he's not. He's just another rich guy who wants his social justice street cred. And, oh, man, I got so many other great stories, but I'm going to hold them. I'm going to hold them for a little bit. That there is your Fastest 15.
This has been the Fastest 15 Minutes in the News. Fast Stories, Fastest 15.
You give us 15 minutes, we'll give you the world. Hey, it's Tuesday. Dave Wyman. I have a lot of stuff. I want to talk to him about that Michael Jordan documentary. Is the NFL schedule supposed to be released on Thursday? But are we going to have a season? We'll talk to Dave Wyman coming up next here on the Dory Monson Show. Okay, we have Dave Wyman on. He's been complaining the last couple of weeks. He's been whining because he says that with the delay, there's about a 1 second delay for Name That Artist. So I am going to handicap myself for every song that Sean plays. I will aloud say 1001 before I answer, and then Dave and I should be on equal footing. All right, Sean, let's have the first song in Name That Artist.
Well, I'm still trying to get Dave on the phone here.
What?
Yeah.
What? I thought he was on.
Oh, no, not yet. We're having some issues.
Issues? We always have issues. But it's only with Wyman. We don't have issues with anybody else. Brock, we don't have issues on Wednesdays.
Right, I think we have
other
Dave
guests.
Now.
Okay.
Yeah, I have to be
Dave,
on the phone.
Okay. Did you hear that in response to your whining, I'm going to handicap myself with a 1001 count before I throw myself into the game? Okay. Is that fair?
Okay. I think I can beat you with the delay.
No, you can't.
Okay.
I'm gonna handicap myself.
It's your show, Dorn. This is your show. I don't know if you know this, but it's your show.
Okay. Go ahead, Sean. 1001, AC/DC.
What happened?
I counted 1001 and then said AC/DC a full second before you.
There's a delay.
Even with... What a whiner.
All
How
right,
are you, Dave?
I'm fine. How are you doing?
good. I tried to call you last night just because I haven't talked to you off the air for a while and wasn't able to hook up with you. You didn't return my call.
I'm sorry.
Nicole's on the air. Sean, Nicole.
Yeah, Nicole, you need to mute your
disasters.
Phone.
Yeah, Nicole's on the air trying to talk to Sean. I'm trying to talk
sorry.
To Dave. get out of here.
It's a pain.
Okay. So, have you been watching this Michael Jordan documentary?
I sure have, and I've been really enjoying it. I like swearing Michael Jordan.
Do you now? That's a shock coming
cursing
from you.
Cursing Michael Jordan is the best version.
Oh, man. He doesn't mind cursing, then or now, back in the heyday or for the documentary.
Yeah. No, I didn't think I could love Michael Jordan anymore until I saw this this documentary. It's really been interesting. And this last one was a little on the dark side, you know, the last two where, you know, he was kind of holed up in his.
All right, we lost Dave.
Oh, man.
Goodness.
Well, should I just take our only time out? The only time out the rest of the half hour. Should I just do it now while we reconnect? Why don't I do that? I'm so depressed right now. Okay, let me take a real quick time out. We'll get back hooked up with Dave Wyman, and then we will have a long commercial-free sweep with him as the Dory Monson Show. Wait for it. Is this a name that artist too? Would it have been?
No.
It's just a regular bump.
Generic, yeah.
Okay, fair enough. All right, it's the Dory Monson Show. Rolls on. I'll give you lots of time to catch up, Dave. Do you know it?
Toto.
Yes! Okay. We're tied at one.
Here we go.
Congratulations. Okay, I take full responsibility for all technical issues. My listeners on the text are saying, hey, it's your show, Monson, and this is happening every week now with Wyman. This is your fault. If you want to take credit for the good in your show, you got to take credit for the bad, and I do, and I apologize to you, Dave.
Yeah, I'm trying to log in, and it's not working again because I don't see my voice. So we're just going to have to do it over the phone. It's just the way we do it on the AM side works every time, but I'm not sure what... Something on the FM side that just doesn't work. But anyway, anywho.
So you were talking about Michael Jordan, and you said these last couple of episodes were dark. And I have a specific question to ask you out of this, but what did you think was particularly dark about this?
Well, I guess that the part where he was trapped in his room, you know, and in there smoking cigars, and he's like, this is my life. And, you know, a lot of people want to be like Mike, but everybody wanted a piece of him, you know, and he was really good at giving it to people. But I just, you know, I experienced a little bit of that hanging out with Elway. And I think I told that story to myself, you know, because I was cut off. But yeah, we had adjoining rooms one time in Cleveland, and I went over in his room. We're watching TV, and all of a sudden some guy knocks on the door, and I open the door, and this guy comes wandering in going, oh, my God, I can't believe I'm in John Elway's room. John's, like, under the covers in his bed laying there. And, you know, I'm sitting on one of the chairs. And so I look at Elway, and he's like, yeah, I don't know who this guy is. Look on his face. So I was like a Secret Service guy. I grabbed him by the back of the arm and the back of the neck. And I was like, all right, young man, you're out of here. And threw him out the door. But, yeah, I mean, that's what he went through all time, you know, and everywhere he went, and he's always handled it patiently and really well. I don't think that I would have been able to do that. So that's a tough, and you know, Jordan's probably 3, 4, 5 times as much, you know, I guess recognition and everything than a guy like John Elway.
Well, he was probably, and I don't want to, I'm thinking about this, he was probably one of the most recognizable human beings on the planet. I mean, it was Ali back in the 70s. It eventually was Tiger Woods after him. But for his era, you know, probably like Michael Jackson and Michael Jordan were probably the most recognizable human beings on the planet at the time.
Yeah. Well, and then the other dark spot is, you know, that they start talking about is gambling. And, you know, he goes in a limo during a playoff game, goes in a limo the night before with his dad to Atlantic City. And I think the next day he scored 54 points or something. I'm like, Dory, I can't help but think that if he hadn't gambled and boosted up the night before, he could have had at least 65 points.
Right. But his team lost the game, and they, you know, they were 0-2. So did you come away? Because I was talking to Nicole about this yesterday, I think. Here's what I've come away with. I always thought he was the greatest basketball player of all time. He might be the greatest team sports player of all time.
Yeah.
And this just solidifies that in my view. I mean, I knew it going in. I'm even more convinced coming out. But I have found him in his 50s now to be more unlikable than I would have guessed.
Oh.
And
oh,
Nicole
really?
Totally disagreed with me on that. Yeah. What do you think?
Yeah, I like him. I like him even more, you know. And the thing is, you know, you find out about him. I mean, the guy, out of, what, his 10 or 11 seasons, he scored 30 or more, like 7 times, 8 times. You know, if you count the 29.6 average, a 28.7 average near the end, but mostly he was scoring over 30, including one year where he's 37. So I thought, oh, yeah, this guy's just a scoring machine and it's all about that. No, what you find out is he wants to win, man. I've never seen anybody that wanted to win more than him. And that's all he cared about. And he was yelling at his teammates and stuff like that. But I mean, the guy's such a winner. It was, and it seems like everybody sort of understood it, but I don't know. You could say with some of the things that he said that he's maybe one of the greatest team, like you said, Dory, team players of all time. And he was just so obsessed with winning that he didn't mind if he hurt somebody's feelings every once in a while.
But I mean, there were some things that seemed, you know, just so petty, like for example, and I don't want to get too deep in the reads here for our listeners, but the Bulls drafted a kid from Yugoslavia, Tony Kukoc. And, and Scottie Pippen was in a contract dispute and wanted more money. And the Bulls were going to pay this European kid all this money. Well, the Dream Team plays, I think he was with Serbia maybe, in the Olympics. And Jordan and Pippen just tormented him. Kukoc hadn't done anything to them. They just were jealous because their GM wanted to pay this kid money, but that wasn't Kukoc's fault. Wasn't that awfully petty?
Well, no, I disagree. I thought they weren't. It wasn't about their being jealous of Kukoc. It was that their stupid GM really liked him and didn't value those two. So they're like, okay, I'm going to let this guy have it. I got a quick story, and maybe I'm petty too, Dory. But there was this at Stanford. There was this house that they were the Theta Delts, and they were kind of the guys on the team that I didn't really care for, and they were kind of high and mighty and cocky. And they had this guy in their house that was a track guy. He was from England, and he's like 6'5", 270 pounds, and he ran a 4.5 40, and so he was going to come out for football. And he was like, and all the guys from that stupid Theta Delta house were like, this guy's going to revolutionize football, and he's the best, and this guy's 6'5", and this and that. So he comes out for spring training, and it was my sole mission to send that guy back to track. And as a matter of fact, the very first time he got on the field, it was like a linebacker on running back blocking thing. And so there was like a sophomore in front of me. I was like, no, here, I'm going on this one. And I ran in, and he, you know, he didn't know how to play football. And I knocked him on his ass as hard as you could, as maybe one of the best hits I've ever had, and just knocked him right on his butt. And then I was kind of like, yeah, how do you like that? You know, because I just, everybody was talking him up that he was going to be the greatest thing since sliced bread and everything. And I just wanted to stick it to everybody who thought that. And so, on that part, maybe that was petty of me, but I could really relate to that, and I loved that part.
Did the guy make the team?
He quit. And I like to think it was because of me.
Oh, man. The one other thing, and this is something that I thought was savvy, because I do get tired of singers and athletes who, you know, try to, you know, make politics their world, and they alienate half their fan base. And Jordan got blasted because Jesse Helms was running for Senate, a Republican that liberals hated, and they wanted Michael Jordan to endorse this black Democrat who was running against him. And Jordan wouldn't do it. And he said, well, Republicans buy sneakers too. And a lot of people thought, oh, you don't care about the world. All you care about is endorsements and money. I think it's fine to stay in your lane that way. But what did you think about all that?
Well, I just thought the only thing that was would I would have advised him, say what you said on the documentary. Of course, he's older and wiser now. But, you know, if he had said, look, my world is basketball, and that's all I care about, and that's all I'm focused on. But you're right, Dory. I mean, we try to stay away from it on our show, whatever. You alienate half your listeners. So why would you go do that? I mean, and maybe he did alienate people by saying that, but he should have just said nothing and said, look, man, I appreciate what you guys got going on there, but I am all focused, all in, and everybody would have probably understood that. But, you know, he just was who he was, so I admired him for that. But also, you know, nowadays, the other thing is, you know, I think a lot of people are tired of, because, you know, there's the whole, the other side is, oh, you just want me to shut up and dribble. It's like, no, it's just that I tuned in for basketball, not for politics. And I don't need to, you know, I mean, you can talk about that some other time, not on my time. So I just, to me, I thought I admired him for that. He probably said the wrong thing. But, you know, like I said, you end up alienating. Remember when Hasselbeck and Max Strong got all, everybody hated him because they went to some George Bush thing?
They presented Bush with a jersey in Bellevue. Yeah.
Yeah, which is what you do to the president. And, you know, they both said, hey, whoever the president was that was going to be here, we were going to do it. But, you know, they got ripped for that. And, you know, so that's where, you know, I think, yeah, to me, I just would never do that. And we try not to do it on our sports show. At least I try not to. Anyway.
No, I agree with you on that.
Yeah.
I know who this is. Yeah. Nirvana.
There you go.
Okay.
Well, considering I couldn't even hear the song.
Whiner.
The protest continues. Yeah.
Whine.
It's all you do is. Up and there's no delay. I can't wait to get back in the studio and punish you, Dory.
You're going to knock
for calling
me
a whiner.
Out of radio the way you did that 65270 Englishman.
All right. Well,
Dave, thank you.
Yeah,
all right.
Fun.
Take care. See ya. Dave Wyman. Every afternoon, 3 to 7, Bob, Dave, and more. The Big Lead at 2 is coming up next on the Dory Monson Show. Throw down your